Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everybody. Happy Party Friday. Julie Hayden, Chuck Bonnywell, the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, Truth Straight Up. Chuck should be joining us here in a few minutes. He's at the world headquarters at the newspaper wrapping things up. We're going to have Tom Tancredo on later in the hour. Chuck has been saying, Tom, we just need to set like a little like a hut at the top of Long, the Lookout Mountain, where people can just go to Tom like the sage, because he has so much expert information on everything that's going on right now. So we'll talk to him about that. But wanted to start out once again with the Colorado Republican Party's Darcy Schoening. Darcy, hey, thank you once again for your time. Whoop, you there? Okay, unmute yourself.
Sorry.
Oh, there you go. Hey, first off, let me offer congratulations. Before we get into, I want to talk about the whole scandal involving the Colorado Springs mayor. But first, congratulations. I see that the recount is official. HD 16, HD 19 flipped red. Republicans or Democrats lose their supermajority. So congrats on that.
Wow. Congrats to everybody who worked on those two races, especially 16. 16 was just all hands on deck. Stephanie B. Hill, I believe, is going to challenge it.
Okay. Oh, well, there's a shocker. But, you know, again, looking at the margin for anybody, I mean, we're talking like dozens of votes here. Anybody who thinks on their election day, oh, my vote doesn't matter. This is absolute proof that it does. So,
yeah, exactly.
So I want to talk to you about, because the Colorado Republican Party, and I think this is smart now, is calling on the incoming Trump Department of Justice and AG Pam Bondi to try to get to the bottom of these allegations that have come up involving the Colorado Springs mayor and the race crime hoax that helped get him elected. Why don't I kind of just let you fill us in with what happened and then the bombshell report from the Daily Wire?
Sure. So I'll give you about a minute of background info, because I'm sure there's a lot of callers that aren't even familiar with me or that race. So there were 8 or 9 candidates in the Colorado Springs mayoral race last spring of 2023. It went to a runoff because none of the candidates got 51% of the vote. When it went to a runoff, it was Wayne Williams and Yemi Mobolod. And on election eve, there was a hate crime in Colorado Springs, wherein there were a lot of crosses burned near Yemi Mobolod signs. And then the N-word was written with red paint on several of his signs. So the media picked it up very quickly. It was a hate crime. It was everywhere. That was a huge deal down here. Now, Yemi Mobolod has been active in the churches and the community for 7-8 years. He moved to Colorado Springs 10 years ago. Between that time and around 2018, nobody knows what he was doing, but he got enough money to open up a couple coffee shops. He used those coffee shops for the hubs of community organizing. And by community organizing, I mean BLM, the trans movement, the Chinook Center, Men of Influence, and it's all tied into progressive causes with Act Blue. So when Yemi Mobolod went to run for mayor, there were people like, you know, me and so many others that were saying, hey, this guy's not conservative. This is not what Colorado Springs wants. There are just so many videos of him. He's a clearly progressive person. So anyways, he was able to pull the wool over dozens of churches' eyes, pastors. We had conservative pastors down here who endorsed him.
Okay.
Yeah, our sheriff endorsed him. Sally Clark, she worked in the Trump administration. She endorsed him. So Yemi Mobolod beat Wayne Williams. Now, if Yemi wasn't running against Wayne, who was just entrenched in the saga with Jenna Griswold, then he got embroiled in the Norwood scandal down here, it may have been a different outcome. But Yemi was able to capitalize off of this DEI, he called himself a DEI candidate from day one. And then this hate crime, which is now a hoax, and he's not answering for any of it. So then there was a Daily Wire article recently. They caught the three people that perpetrated this hate crime hoax. They're all very close to Yemi. Yemi is denying how close he is to these individuals. And the Daily Wire article, if you are to believe the Daily Wire, which I do, I don't have any reason not to, they said that DOJ said, we cannot prosecute Yemi Moblad for this hate crime or for lying to authorities because we can't prosecute the first Black mayor of Colorado Springs.
And so, so three people were, have been, and one of them who is currently in jail for murder were the three people who were arrested and accused of this whole thing was a hoax. They're African-American men. There was no hate crime. They're African-American men. There were texts and phone calls and contacts recovered between these men and Moblad, which appear to be them saying, hey, we're helping you get across the finish line. Then they were charged. The mayor wasn't, but according to the FBI, an FBI source, unnamed source in the Daily Wire. The FBI source says that Moblad was interviewed three times by the FBI. And one of the times was lied to them, allegedly saying, oh, I never had any contact with these people, not realizing that the FBI had already retrieved the other suspect's phones so they could prove that wasn't true. By the time they got around to interviewing him the third time, now he doesn't remember anything. And so this is it. And I just want to share with folks, and we have Chuck, I think, on the phone. So Chuck, feel free to chime in. You know, these are pretty detailed.
My Yahoo account went down, okay. So I couldn't hit the same link. Sorry.
Okay. That's no worries. The phone works just as well. These are pretty specific allegations by this FBI source. These aren't just kind of random. I mean, he's got specifics about the interview. He's got specifics about the Department of Justice saying we're not going to prosecute for race and political reasons the first Black mayor of Colorado Springs. But the biggest issue is, which I think the Colorado Springs Republican Party or the Colorado Republican Party and you guys are pushing, is why hasn't the mayor just addressed it? Now, he put out a statement yesterday essentially saying, oh, he's a victim. I don't see how he's a victim in this. But Darcy, are people, it wasn't enough, right? He just said, I didn't do anything wrong. He didn't say, did you talk to these people? What is the meaning of these texts that have been released?
Right. Well, he's doing the bare minimum. I mean, you can look at it from a legal perspective and kind of say to yourself, why is he saying so little? This has been out for 3 weeks now.
Right.
Well, he's saying so little because he doesn't want to incriminate himself in any more lies or anything he shouldn't say. But the if you are to believe, like I said, the Daily Wire and the DOJ official that was quoted, I mean, Yemi has told the public that he did not know who this Derek Bernard person was, the murderer, the main defendant who burned the crosses. He said Derek was a media person. I don't know who Derek is. Okay, I have an entire Google Drive that shows otherwise, that shows him hanging out with Derek for the last 3 years, that shows him money to Derek. So he is not being truthful with the most basic facts.
Right. And
he's banking on the fact that the people around him, being the people in power in Colorado Springs and the media, will run cover for him. And they largely are.
They largely are. I was going to say the color of the Anschutz own Colorado Springs Gazette you would think they would be driving this. I mean, this is a progressive who was elected and essentially a conservative stronghold. And yet they're kind of running cover. I will say it looks to me like some of the TV stations seem to be pushing on this, at least picking it up. But none of the Anschutz controlled media up here have followed up on it. It's like you said, most of our listeners probably have no idea.
That's not exactly true. They did run, the Colorado Springs Gazette did run an article by George Brockler.
That's true.
Saying should be answering these questions. And, you know, whether you believe Daily Wire doesn't matter because he's proved it. I mean, when they said, well, did you lie to the FBI? And he gives some just vague, you know, I've cooperated and all that. You know, it's clear he lied to the FBI. And the trouble with a 1001 charge, it's so subjective by the FBI that they can say, okay, Michael Flynn, we find you guilty, and somebody else we don't, which is why they probably should get rid of. But it's perfect. Okay, we're, for political reasons, we're not going to let this guy who clearly did know. I love his nickname, You Gorilla.
Yeah.
You Gorilla. Yeah, who's You Gorilla? I don't know. You know, I mean, he had a radio show, so, you know.
They had texts that clearly, unless he's saying, hey, this random person that you never heard of, and that may happen, is just texting me. I have no idea what they mean. But the texts are saying things like, don't worry, we're going to get you across the finish line. And then there are other texts that say something about, hey, you know, we got everything done. We can handle that business about essentially paybacks. I mean, there was a clear implication. Well, maybe a possible interpretation that this guy who is now in prison for murder was saying, hey, look, we set this up for you, and now I expect you to get me a job somewhere in the city. I mean, those are the implications. And for him to just say, oh, I can't talk about it because it's an ongoing investigation. Sure, he can. The indictments with these texts are out there, right? There's nothing wrong with him saying, from his point of view, I had no idea. But he won't say that, which because he can't. Right, he clearly knew these people, and he needs.
He's not in prison for murder. He is in prison for murder for hire. He hired a killer to kill this rap artist in Colorado Springs, and the contracted killer did kill him. So he's in prison for life without parole.
Yeah.
So that, you know, it's hardly too much anybody can do to him or for
right.
him, to tell you the truth. But the mayor of Colorado Springs, I mean, is this so typically perfect of our political system in Colorado? We get a total fraud and as you said, you know, you got the sheriff backing him, you got all these Republican figures backing him. I mean, I'm not sure is that Darcy due to the fact that everybody hates Wayne Williams, or who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, they were. That's a big part of it. Everybody was so upset with Wayne that they were willing to overlook what all this that was out about Yemi and vote Yemi into office. Now, no matter how you feel about Wayne, we've got a socialist hate crime perpetrating. And there were some of us down here that tried to say that. Like, I remember saying, look, like, you got to put your feelings for Wayne aside because we at least need a Republican in that seat. This guy is dangerous. We don't even know, like I said, we don't even know why he came here and where he got all this money to start opening up these businesses and these churches and these nonprofits.
Well, and he's funneling money, city money, to a lot of these places now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's your typical Democrat money laundering scheme, right? Scheme. Yeah. I mean, they support him, then he now supports them, then they support him. I mean, am I right there?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and you're right. That's exactly what this is. And that's why this is so dangerous. And we have to stay on him because, I mean, like the way that the media is running cover and everybody's running cover, we've got what? Three elected officials in the whole state that are willing to say something?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I will say Wayne Williams, I think, put something up, but George Brocker, Dave Donaldson, and one of the El Paso County commissioners.
Dallas.
Right. And so one of the things, too, I think that people...
How about our brave, brave legislators who represent Colorado Springs? Have they said anything?
Nope.
Nope.
No.
Okay.
No. Well, and again, the hate crime hoax. I mean, people need to realize this was a hoax. This is a hoax of the Jussie Smollett kind, almost, right? Where these are African American men. There was no threat to him. That the design of it, the whole thing. What you take out even him knowing about it, the point was to try to stir up race. And as you said, the big crime is it painted Colorado Springs as this racist KKK city, right?
Right, right. And that was the entire goal. And Julie, there's a lot out there to suggest that this is connected to the Mallorys, the big scene that's going on in South Colorado Springs with the sheriff, where the black couple is suing the sheriff saying that they've been treated racist. And guess what? Same crosses, same red paint, and guess what? Similar incidents in Yoder. So we're starting to find out that it looks like there is some heavy community organizing going on in Colorado Springs to basically rip it apart from the inside by saying this, you know, this conservative Christian stronghold is actually just a big KKK pit.
And it's not. And it's not. Well, and then back to, again, when you read the Daily Wire source, the information in there from the FBI source, it is very believable. It's not sort of vague. It's very specific. Yeah. This clearly was somebody who had either was in on the interviews or had access to the paperwork or people who were in on the interviews. And the mayor just, he needs to address it. And I think you guys are so smart. Let me ask you this. Are you shocked that the Biden administration says, oh, no, we're not going to prosecute the first black mayor of Colorado Springs? Is that a surprise to anyone?
No, it's not a surprise. I think what's disturbing about it is that we know about it. The only reason we know about it is because Derek went off and killed somebody. And yeah, then they started. So what all is going on in our country that we don't know about? And that's what's so disturbing with this narrative being pushed.
Right. Well, and hopefully, I mean, you know, hopefully Pam Bondi, you know, we'll get on this. Hopefully. Now, I don't know, you know, I don't know if Jeff Crank is going to be, so far he hasn't weighed in on this. Although I'll cut him some slack. I'm not a fan, but I'll cut him some slack. This is all just kind of happening and I can see he's newly elected. He's got a lot of stuff going on, but I would hope that that at the very least, the Trump Department of Justice could just take a look at it and say, well, wait a minute, let's just go back and let's look at the interviews and let's look at what happened and let's see if somebody, as you know, as you said, the Colorado Republican Party wants to know, number one, who made the decision that we weren't going to prosecute it because of, you know, because he's an African-American, because he's black, because he's not African-American, actually, he's Nigerian. And then number two is, well, what really happened? What really was his potential? Because you can't have your mayor being a an alleged criminal. Well, in Denver, I guess you can, but in Colorado Springs, you shouldn't.
Yeah.
What I like is that people are saying, well, you know, this is stirring up racial division and hatred. No, it's not. It's stirring up white guilt. I mean, there really isn't, you know, all the cross burns here that hasn't caused the black community to explode or anything. It is convinced all the pathetic white guilt people to vote for somebody who they know nothing about over a Republican who they know too much about.
Yeah, you're exactly. He was elected on guilt.
Right. Well, and this is from Charlene. And again, I think, and good for you guys for calling on, like you said, other state lawmakers to just say, hey, let's just answer the questions, right? I mean, from Charlene, the only thing worse than a Democrat is a rhino, because you expect the Democrats to screw over Republicans and then you're on your guard to stop them. It's worse when one of your own sabotages you. You're not on guard. And that's why rhinos are worse. And that's why I would hope. And I'll give credit to George Brockler, the newly elected DA, because, and he kind of laid out, he goes, here's a real specific questions at this guy. Did you send these emails? Did you receive these emails? Did you know what they were talking about? Right? Did you have any idea this is going on? That's not going to interfere with anyone's investigation.
Right. It's simple. Answer these questions. No, I.
He's not going to. I mean, his criminal attorneys are going to tell him, shut up. You know, it doesn't matter what they do to you. Just shut up. You cannot. Because everybody knows you really did lie to the FBI and you really were a part of his scam and everything else. And the more you go out there, the more that's going to become evident. So he's just going to hunker down, and it'll be interesting to see whether a hunker down strategy might work. I mean, quite frankly, Biden did a hunker down strategy for the 2020 election that worked really well. So maybe this guy will just kind of go, not going to answer the questions, blah, 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 you know, I'm being racially harassed and I won't put up with this type of racial harassment of me and see if it works. It might.
I mean, and there was no racial harassment of him. And in fact, the implication is that there's no harassment of him for race reasons. Well, do you think so, Darcy? I'm glad for the Colorado Republican Party stepping up. You know, my guess, as you said, you know, the Anschutz-controlled media, they've kind of addressed it, but they could be pushing this. And calling on the Trump administration, because, I mean, they don't know, right? Somebody's got to bring it to their attention. And hopefully, you know, this will kind of filter its way up where at least a decision gets made, right? As opposed to just the Trump people, Pam Bondi's like, well, no one ever told me about this.
Yeah, yeah. No, well, I'm sure they've already seen it, and I'm going to stay on it. We're all going to stay on it. There should be, I don't foresee any reason why they wouldn't look into this. Let's put it that way. So I don't believe that this isn't going to die. And there's, you know, all these Republicans down here in Colorado Springs, basically, like, they smell blood in the water right now because Yummy is exposed. So there's, you know, three or four of them that are, oh, I'm going to run for city council. I'm going to run for mayor. All right, well, then show us you have the strength and the fortitude right now. If you're right. going to run for mayor to take his job in a couple years, show us, do something right here. Like, help us get in trouble or help us get in contact with the Trump administration. You know, continue to call on him to answer these questions. If these individuals truly want to take over that seat and they want to do the right thing and serve the community, then help us right these wrongs first.
Right. Well, and as you said, and essentially clear Colorado Springs name, right? Yeah. Because the people of Colorado Springs deserve that. If you are having this very organized, progressive push to paint Colorado Springs, as you said, which is a conservative Christian stronghold, to paint it as a bunch of racists.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a concerted effort, it seems to me. And the people of Colorado Springs should be demanding essentially that their name be cleared as well, I think, and say, we need to get to the bottom of this. And if the mayor wasn't involved and he had no clue, okay, fine. But that's just not let him get away with, oh, I can't comment on it. And these specific questions need to be addressed, I think.
Yeah. And I like how you put that. You're exactly right. The name of the community needs to be cleared because that's not who we are. I mean, when that happened, I was like, this just doesn't even, who does this in 2024 in Colorado Springs?
Right.
They right. don't.
No.
I'm not going to say there's not off chances there's racism in our country still, but like, not like that.
No. No. Well, and how many times have we seen across the country when it is a hoax, right? It's, I mean, anymore, my thing is hoax, you know, I mean, it's sort of like, you got to prove it now to me that this wasn't. And these guys weren't particularly.
You knew it was a hoax from the beginning, because quite frankly, putting up the N-word on a sign and burning a cross is not going to get you a lot of votes for your Republican. You know, that is not going to be a positive campaign thing for the Republican. So whoever did it was not trying to help Wayne Williams. It was just to do race guilt on people and have them vote for Yummy. I mean, that's, you know, it wasn't, no one thought, oh yeah, by doing that, that'll really help Wayne Williams a lot. No, they knew it wouldn't help Wayne Williams. This is why they did it. And so did everybody else who knew anything. And in fact, it'd be interesting to go back and see how many Republicans, for that matter, went out, you know, and beat their chest and were saying, this is awful, hate crimes. We can't have hate crimes in our city. You know, I'd love to see the quotes and the media reaction of politicians who all would rush to the microphone to defend the fact that poor Yummy was under a race attack along with Jesse Smollett. And I bet you get a lot of good ones if we went back.
And where are they now?
Yeah. Yeah, where are they now? Hey, well, listen, Darcy, we will let you go. Please keep us, and you do a great job putting out the press releases and things like that, but keep us up to speed because I think, you know, again, that we can't let people get away with this. And like I said, besmirching the name of Colorado Springs. And plus, you can't have a mayor who's involved in this kind of stuff, you know? And it's like, and if the rhinos in Colorado Springs aren't going to get involved, well, then we will, okay? And so...
Thank you for having me on and being willing to talk about this. And you always have me on to talk about the difficult subjects. So thank you. You guys are doing the work that Anschutz won't do.
All right. Thank you, Darcy. We appreciate you. We appreciate your time. Let's see here. All of this from Chuck. I'll read some of the comments. Charlene also goes on to say Brockler should be taking on the lawfare affecting Tina Peters instead of grandstanding with this. Well, you know, Charlene, the only thing I'm going to say about that is I think you should do both. He can multitask, right? He's a pretty bright guy. After Joni Ernst and Lindsey Graham, we now see where rhinos are demoralizing and worse than battles with Dems, which are invigorating. That's true. And then Leo, you know it's a rhino when they drop a bar of soap in front of you in the jail shower. You're about to get screwed. Yeah, we'll see. You know, on the Joni Ernst thing, That's kind of going forward. I think she's starting to lose that battle, Chuck, against the Pete Hegseth thing. What do you see happening there?
Yeah, it seems to be changing. You know, it hit kind of a peak. I mean, if Hegseth makes it, then certainly Kash Patel will make it as FBI. I mean, look, and they're the most controversial of all the picks, so that's all looking pretty good, really, I think.
It is. Hey, and Thomas, if you want to go ahead and call Tom Tancredo, we can bring him on a little bit early if you want. Well, another kind of interesting thing, it's sort of from a legal thing. So in the Daniel Penny case, he's the guy who was accused of manslaughter after he had some crazed psycho person in the subway attacking people. And then he wrestled him and the guy ended up dying. And they charged him with manslaughter. Well, the jury was deadlocked over the manslaughter charge. The judge granted the prosecution's request to dismiss that charge. So now they're going to bring him back on Monday to deliberate the, I guess, sort of the lesser but included crime, criminally negligent homicide. The defense is hollering about that, saying, yeah, there should have been a mistrial. You can't just dismiss it, right? And then say, okay, well, now we're going to go and try on the lesser charge. I mean, if you're the prosecution, like the defense said, this would lead, you could charge whatever crime you want coming out of the grand jury. And then if it doesn't look good, just go ahead and drop it. I mean, what's your thought on that?
Well, you know, if the New York courts could do anything more to make sure that no one has any trust in the legal system, they're doing a good job. And here's one more example where they're just taking somebody and they're, you know, figuring out every way to Sunday to destroy him. It's awful. And the judge should have said, okay, this case is
mistrial.
And if you want to retry him again, I guess you have the right to. But you don't kind of go, okay, we'll try the next one. How about the next one? Hey, how about this one?
And if that's what, hey, listen, we have Tom Tancredo with us now. And Chuck, I'll let you introduce him and explain your letting him be the wise sage in a hut on Lookout Mountain. Hey, Tom, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It can only spend 10 seconds after that introduction.
Here, Chuck, go ahead and I'll let you introduce and explain.
All right. Well, I came up with this idea about 5 o'clock this morning where we do set up a small hut or maybe a temple like thing. Similar with the Delphi Oracle, or just a stage, you know, just kind of, and you sit out there, and because you've been part of and have enormous knowledge on four of the most important questions in Colorado or anywhere, quite frankly. First, you were a school teacher for various years, so you can speak incredibly well on the challenges and the problems with public unions and everything else. And that's an incredible debate we're having. And you're incredibly knowledgeable in that. And then he went to the state legislature, where you're one of the House crazies. So you can talk about why the Republican Party always ended up in Rhino Land, what's wrong with the House Republicans and our whole Republican Party in Colorado. And then after you finish that one, you went on to be a federal bureaucrat under the Reagan administration, fighting for his fight to cut down the enormous bureaucracies, including the Department of Education. And you were part of that fight, which you could, you know, advise the DOGE Commission, hey, this is what you're going to face. This is what's going to happen. And finally, you were a congressman for 10 years. So, you know, all the problems with Congress and everything else. So, God, what else is there?
What is there? We're just going to have you solve all the problems, Tom.
I did run UH Gardens for a while.
Oh, there you go.
Don't forget that.
That's good, too. Well, let me ask you, I'll jump in and ask the first question. If you could, having been in the bureaucracy and seen it and from all, you know, which ways to Sunday, how challenging is it going to be for them to kind of make any groundwork?
Well, describe your 10 years as being a, I guess, assistant administrator at the Colorado Department of Education.
Yeah. Well, it will be a challenge for a couple of reasons. For anybody, DOGE or anybody, I don't know. They are probably, however, you got Elon there and And Vivek, I tell you, these are the smartest guys in the world. I'm sure they'll figure out a way. But what the things that they will immediately come up with are just that. Number one, we've given the bureaucracy a lot of time to prepare with everything that we've said about what we're going to do, what Trump is going to do. They are in the process of doing that. Right now, you see they signed a contract to say that, for 5 years, you don't worry, you don't have to come into work. So, because he was going to say, the hell with this work at home crap. Nobody does it anyway, so you have to come in. So they've just signed a contract for that. Now, I'm sure there's a way to get around it, but it's that kind of thing. They're all right now digging in every way possible that they can think of. It's like before he left, he turned a whole bunch of SES people. Now, he says, this is all I know, kind of weeds, but senior executive service is what it's called. And they are all appointees, and they all could leave and would be able to be ousted by the secretary. And you could do it at time during the tenure or at the end of their tenure. And then people coming in, taking over, could also dump them because SES can be dumped. He changed thousands of them into civil service jobs. So at 15, 15s. So you, that level 15. So, which is very high. It's the highest, but it used to be, I know, maybe changed, but that was it. And of course, that starts a different process. If you want to fire anybody in the federal government, and especially in the Department of Education, because it may be different in other places. This is the only one I can speak to in a degree of hopefully being accurate, is the fact that in education, you have not only civil service, which honest to God is the rules there are just mind boggling. And then the second, you've got a union on top of it. and so you're fighting these two fronts, either one of which can be absolutely, devastating to your efforts. And for instance, when I first went in, and all this, by the way, I learned there. I didn't know anything about it when I walked in the door. I thought, because I thought that tells you tonight that I got the call, and the guy said, because I was in the state legislature. I had just been appointed to the JVC. Oh my God, it was so much fun. It really was. And this guy said, your name has been given to us, thank you, of course, and Wilfrida Poundstone, or both. But your name has been given to us as someone who might serve in this administration. And I said, oh, God, are you kidding me? I said, who do I have to kill? And he said, no.
Yeah. Sure.
You were a delegate for Reagan, which I was, Detroit, and then you were a surrogate speaker for him during the campaign. I said, yes, I was. He said, well, we got your name in. So would you like to serve? And I said, well, of course, my God.
Yeah.
I think he's the one most wonderful guy in the world. And I said, but in what capacity? He said, well, you are a teacher, and then you were the chairman of the education committee in the state legislature. So, it'd be something to make a education. So I said, well, please don't take this the wrong way. I said, because I really am flattered more than I can even begin to express. But I said, I think, yeah. The guy goes, what do you mean you'll pass? I said, listen, buddy, I don't believe we should have a U.S. Department of Education. And he goes, well, that's why we're calling you. So I thought, well, this might work out. So we need to talk, and oh my gosh, well, what capacity? Some assistant secretary of something or other in Washington. And I Washington Post. I said, well, don't take this wrong. I don't think I can do it. Why? I said, well, because my wife's a teacher. She doesn't want to quit. I said, we have a house. And remember, you perhaps remember, 1980, right? This was 1980 or 81. And you had to give away a Mercedes with your house, you know, to get it sold. I mean, the interest rates were, I don't remember, 28%, the inflation at 12, or vice versa. Anyway, nothing. You couldn't give away a house. And I said, you know, I can't just walk away and can't sell our house. And oh my God, finally, I leave them. All right. So then about a week later, they called me back and they said, we're going to make these regional offices, political appointments, like the other stuff, the SEC, SES. And I said, regional office, what's that? Where's that? And he said, well, it's in Denver. That's region 8. And he says, you got 6 states, Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, Utah, and the Dakotas. And I said, well, you know, as I can be honest with you, yeah, you're right. I've had quite a background in education. I've never heard of the regional office in Denver. Never used it, never had anything to do with it. Well, that's part of the problem. He said, you know, there are plenty of people out there. We send out checks every couple of weeks. Somebody cashes them. And so I said, well, okay, I could live here. Yeah, he says, you can stay. I thought, well, that's good. Everything, that's fine. That's fine. And so I accepted. So I go in, and by the way, you know, the whole idea that they kept saying, we've got to implode this place because we can't get rid of it because, and this is the other thing that I learned. The Department of Education, and there are a couple of others, I'm sure, that were formed through legislation, a bill, a law passed the department creating, and Carter did it as a sop to the NEA, to the National Education Association. He promised them, they promised him, you know, they'd support him, but only if he supported the creation of the department, because then the money would flow.
Right, exactly.
They supported him, he won, so he created it, but it took him a while. So it had only been in existence when president came in, it had only been in existence about a year and a half. We tried a Republican member of Congress to carry a bill to get rid of it, and we could not get a single member to.
Whoa.
One. Yeah.
Do you think, Todd, that people? Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh no. Well, I can say so. Therefore, we were told there are 9 other political appointees in the 10 regions. Okay, we were called secretaries, regional representatives. Is different way than a director. You know, the regional director for something like EPA. My friend Steve, he came in as the regional director under, and I got there's a long story about how I got her in. But anyway, I was a kid because I had to promise Rita Poundstone that she was always been a Reagan supporter, which was we loved her and she was fantastic and brilliant and all that stuff. So I said yes, and she came in as the head of EPA, you may recall. And she appointed my buddy Steve as the regional director. He had all kinds of power that I did not, direct power to programs, all kinds of things. I was the regional representative. And so it limited me in a lot of ways. But again, I didn't even understand that. I go in and we were told, all 10 of us were told, your task is to try to reduce that size. And I think kept using the word implode the department.
Okay.
I thought this is going to be fun, right?
Right.
A lot of fun. And so I go in with that in mind. And oh my goodness, how I'd walk down the hall, knock on the door of the next office down from mine, and I say, "Hi, I'm your new representative." And say, "Well, I'm a GS 12. I say, "Oh, well, what do you do?" I'm an ed tech. Okay. I said, here's what let's do. You come in, you sit down at that desk. Then what happens? Well, it was apparent that actually that for many of them, nothing.
Nothing happened. Right.
Well, because for one thing, among other things, the previous secretary, the Democrat secretary, anyway, went ahead, pulled a lot of the stuff that was in the regional offices, a lot of the programs, Washington. Good. However, they left all the people. So literally had a whole bunch who had nothing to do. So they were cutting out newspaper articles, you know, from the six states about education stuff. And then I will never forget one lady. And I went into her office and I said, "Hi, what do you do?" She said, "I'm the regional office librarian." I said, "Oh, where's the library?" And she said, "Saw it when you came down there again." I said, "No, I don't think I did." She says, "Well, I'll show you." And then it gets up. We're walking down the hall. She grabs my arm and says, "This is it." And what we were standing next to was a three-tiered magazine rack. Okay? It went about halfway down this hall. And I said, "This is it?" She says, "Yeah, this is the library." "Oh, yeah, okay." Well, and she was making like $35,000 a year. And that was 1980, okay?
Wow.
That was a lot of money.
But it reminds me, when I did my internship at WLS Radio in Chicago, they had unions there. And this was right as it was going from records to, like, remember they had the little cassette tapes, right? And they had a union job that was a record turner, only there were no records to be turned, right? And but you couldn't tell the person to do something else. So what it usually was, and was some college kid, you know, going to college, and they would come and they do all their study there. But literally, they had to pay this person to turn records, even though there were no records to be turned. Well, do you think people have a clue how many positions like that exist and how hard it's going to be to get rid of them?
No, they absolutely do not. If you, I kept saying, let's go outside, put up a booth in the front of the federal building here on 18th and Stout and say, "Here is a ticket, free ticket. Go through this federal building and just look at the people who are doing absolutely nothing, mostly asleep at their desk." No, nobody has the slightest idea. And I thought to myself at the time, "Oh boy, this is going to be easy to get rid of. Oh my gosh, these people don't have anything to do. I'm going to dump them." Well, of course, that was the second shock I got, because the first one, I was only there a day or two, and I get a call saying, "This is the office of the secretary, blah, blah, blah. So you have $72,000 in your can. What are you going to do with it? Because you're coming up to the end of the fiscal year," which is our first in February. I said, "Well, what's my can? I don't know anything you're talking. What do you mean 70? I've only been here a couple of days. I don't even." "Well, that's the money you got left over from your budget, $72,000. And I said, "Oh, I have no idea." I said, "Don't worry, I'm not going to do anything with it." And I said, "And not only that, but next year, there'll be a lot more than that that you can be able to take." And he goes, "You don't understand." I can tell. He says, "You don't understand that if they can prove, they being the union, can prove that you purposely underspent your budget, they can take you to court on. That's against the law." And they said, "What are you talking about?" Well, in fact, when Nixon was president, he impounded a bunch of money that the Congress had spent. They reacted by passing a law saying, "Look, stupid, our job is to appropriate the money. Your job is to spend it. And if you try to screw with that, you know, we're going to make it against the law for you to do so." Well, I said, "I'll tell you what. when you come in to arrest me, I want you to let me know, just have a little bit of time to get the press here, because I'd love to be seen walking out in handcuffs for underspending my budget.
Yeah.
Oh, my anxiety. Next thing I know, of course, within seconds, that the $72,000 was gone, was put into the secretary's fund and spent by October 1st. So
oh my God.
That was the first lesson I learned. Then I learned that you can't fire anybody because they don't have a job. You're not able to do that because they say if they're there, they somehow got hired, it's not their fault that they don't have a job. It's the administrator's fault. You have to find something for them to do.
Oh, goodness.
You can't fire them for like your guy.
Right. There's no records to be turned. It's like you can't. Well, yeah.
Well,
I mean, and probably they're protected. I know this record turner, because it would be like, well, can the record turner do something else? And they were like, nope. You know, and so probably you have the same sort of bureaucracy things there too, right? They're hired with a certain job description. And if you try to say, okay, look, we don't really need them to turn records, but we could use them over here, like the librarian, right?
No,
can't
do that. There was, and I could give you an example. There's another guy. This one was amazing. Oh, God. I even remember his name. Anyway, he came in as a when I got down to him, he said, I'm a federal real property officer. And I said, what is that? And he said, well, big program. Oh, yeah. What? He says, the federal government has lots of real property, houses, land, and they sometimes excess them. They're done. Don't need them anymore. He says, so we check with any of the surrounding educational facilities, colleges, whatever, to see whether they could use this stuff. And then they sign a contract, and I I'm supposed to go every year at a certain time and make sure they're doing whatever they said they were going to do with this property. And then after 3 years, I can give him the title. And I said, oh, wow, that is interesting. And I said, how long have you been here? He said, 5 years. I said, how many pieces of property have you transferred? He said, well, there's quite a few in the pipeline. I said, 5 years. And I said, well, how many pieces of property have you reviewed? And he said, we've never had any travel money. So I thought, okay, 5 years, no. Yeah, thank you. And I go out thinking, okay, there's one going to go. You know, I mean, this is going to be easy. Not, again, knowing
right.
that that's not possible. And it turns out, oh my God, he was African American fellow and a very nice guy and all, but apparently had gotten into the bureaucracy somewhere in some agency. They found out that he really wasn't very capable, so they just simply kept bouncing him around to other agencies in education. Now, there were things that came in for him to do, some paperwork that needed to be done apparently, and you know, stuff associated with this. So every week they would pack it up and send it to the guy in Region 7 in Kansas City to do, and then would give that guy a $10,000 bonus or a huge bonus.
So the guy wasn't doing it. They couldn't fire him, so they gave his work to somebody else and then paid that somebody
right.
else extra money to do it. That's insanity. Hey, Tom, I had to check it. Oh, we could have you on for a month with this. It's like those people, but we got to go.
No, I know.
What do you mean we got to go? Well,
we do.
We're just getting started here.
I know. We're going to have him on for a month.
We're going to make, I'm making an executive decision. We're going to make January Tom Pancrato month. And we're going to have Tom on every show all month just to go through. And we'll only get through a partial of it, but a portion of his incredible knowledge and background in 1,000 different areas. But Tom, it's been great having you. And, we will have you back as particularly as this Doge thing crawls along, and we'll get to get your insights on how they're doing.
All right, Tom, thank you so much. Have a great Friday.
You guys too. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you. Those stories, Chuck, you're right, are just like insane. And this is somebody who's willing to tell the truth about it. Hey, listen, that's going to wrap it up for us on this Party Friday. On Monday, we're going to have John Lott Jr. on. He's going to be talking about the statistics. He's a statistics kind of guy. The left would have you believe that illegal immigrants commit no crimes. So he's got some of the hard, cold facts about it. So we'll get to the bottom of that, too. You guys had a lot of great comments today.
We're also going to have Sue Moore from the greatest organization there is in Colorado, which is the Liberty Scorecard, to discuss some of their things. I mean, they're the one and only operation in the entire state that makes legislators, Republican legislatures, have their record revealed. And it really is the best organization, because you can actually find out how your legislature, when they tell you how conservative they are, you can find out whether that's false, true, or an utter lie.
We'll be keeping an eye on them. Exactly, as we head into legislative session. So, and again, great comments. Sorry we couldn't get to them all. Probably most of them. But next time. But in the meantime, that'll wrap it up for us. Everybody have a great weekend, and we will see everybody on Monday.
Bye-bye.